That as well. Okay, great. Thank you. So I'm going to talk about the use of the Lyman Alpha Forest as a cosmological probe, and the first bit I will just spend just a few seconds in saying what the Lyman Alpha Forest is and why, especially now, it is important. I will describe then the LUCAS, the observational sample, where LUCAS stands for Large UVS Quasar Absorption Spectra. I will describe the hydrodynamical simulation that we have been that we used in order to interpret this data set. And in the last part, I will show you some results in terms of cosmological parameters, in particular in terms of sigma 8, the running spectral index, the spectral index. And I will briefly address some implication for inflation and some recent work, very, very preliminary, that I've been doing on neutrinos and water matter mass, and some implication for the ionization background. Okay, this work is mainly describing these two papers here. So on the left, you have the IGM distribution in our universe at redshift 3, and you have this complex network of filaments. This is the distant source, which is a quasar. The quasar emits photons, and the photons basically are absorbed by the intervening neutral hydrogen. And so 80% of the baryons at redshift 3 are supposed to be in this kind of filamentary structure. And when you observe these filaments, you have a line of sight. You have a spectra, a quasar spectra, and this is the photon counts from a very high resolution spectra taken with UVS as a function of the wavelength. Okay, so all these lines here are actually absorption by neutral hydrogen along the line of sight. And they probe different environments. This is probably dense environments. These are less dense environments. And so our assumption is basically if this background is in photoionization equilibrium, the optical depth in neutral hydrogen, which quantifies the absorption, is basically proportional to this quantity here. So in order to describe the background, this absorption, you need several ingredients, but the two main important is the distribution of the IGM and its temperature, okay? The two most important ones, okay? And at least at large scales, scales larger than the so-called Jeans length, which is more or less one Kamuvi megaparsec, the density fluctuation in the IGM should resemble those of the dark matter. Okay, so if you observe the neutral hydrogen, if you observe this flux, this absorption, then there is some hope that, at least at large scales, statistical quantities concerning of the flux should be similar. In particular, the flux power spectrum should be similar to the underlying dark matter power spectrum. Okay. So people already did that, in particular Croft and collaborators. And before WMAP, this is the estimate of the power spectrum of the dark matter as a function of k in kilometer per second, because these structures are observed in velocity space, for basically a set of 50 spectra at a median redshift of 2.72. And you can see that the points here are their determination. And you can see that they are quite well fit by a model which an omega matter of, with an omega matter of 0.4 or lambda of 0.6, with an heavy tilt in the spectrum and a pretty low sigma 8. Okay? And when WMAP came out, Verde et al. Took this data set as long as with the other data set. Here is WMAP. Here is the extended other cosmic microwave experiment. This is with 2DF. But it's only when you add, when you combine these data points here, okay, with the WMAP, that you get some kind of most statistically significant results concerning the tilt in the power spectrum and NS. You see the best value is 0.93 plus minus 0.03. And a running spectral index seems to gain some statistical significance here, at least at 2 sigma level, it is not compatible with 0. Okay, so there is a hint of a running. And notice that, however, WMAP alone is more or less, the value is at 1 sigma of the case in which NS, there is no running. So it's minus 0.047 plus minus 0.04. So it really is, the interest in the last year on the Lyman Alpha Forest was mainly due to this fact here. When you add the Lyman Alpha Forest data point, it seems that there is something strange going on, at least. And so why is that important? Why do we want to add these data points? This is because of this plot here, which is the power spectrum as a function of wave number in h of a megaparsec here. This is taken from Tegmark and Dariaga. And as you can see here, there you have only these red points here as from the Lyman Alpha Forest. And you have only this point to probe these scales of, let's say, these are scaled between 40 and 4 megaparsec moving. Okay, so there is some overlap with other determination, but this determination at these scales is pretty much unique. Okay, so in a sense, you want to combine the two to get better error bars, smaller error bars on your cosmological parameters. But know that in a way, the cosmic microwave background physics is simple. It contains first approximation, just the dynamical information of the growth or the structure at redshift 1000, while the information that you have here contains this dynamical information that you want to recover, but this dynamic information is convolved with the thermodynamical state of your intergalactic medium. Okay, so the idea is to take the power spectrum of the flux and see how it relates to the linear dark matter power spectrum and try to find a way to relate it. This is just a sketch of the simulation we have been running in Cambridge. It's pretty much, just to show you that there are these filamentary structures, and this is just we are moving along the simulation. Along the box, this is a 60 megaparsec box, and there are 400 cube particles in dark matter, 400 cube particles for the gas, and it takes about 2 weeks and a half to run on 32 processor in Cambridge. And we run basically a model in N and sigma 8 for these box size and resolutions, a grid of models. So this is the sample, okay, 27 spectra, as part that were part of the LP program by ESO, and the PI was Jacqueline Bergeron, and they have very high resolution, 0.05, good signal to noise, which is above 50 more or less in the forest region, and these are the spectra ordered by redshift, and you can see that they are pretty different. At redshift 1.7 you have not so many absorption, redshift 4.7 you have little flux, and there are some gaps. There are these continuum fluctuations are very different from quasar to quasar. And the redshift probe is pretty much unique. It's 2.1, okay? This redshift cannot be probed by Sloan, or marginally, it can be probed by Sloan. And the Croft data sample peaks at redshift 2.7. So we can really analyze the two. You're wondering about, for example, shocks, this kind of... You mean redshift, for example, 2, yeah. 2.1? You think that this could be a big effect in well, you know, the gas responsible of Lyman Alpha Forest is at least this is the common understanding, is thought to be to reside in low density environments. So in the simulation we have been running, the gas which produces the absorption arises from even under dense region or over density, let's say, of 10 at maximum. The gas that you have above this threshold plays a very little role in this determination. And as I will show you later some temperature density relation, this relation is pretty tight, okay? And it emerged from basically the photonization equilibrium equations, a balance between the adiabatic expansion and this photon. So I don't think that shocks are a big problem up to now. So some other, this is the main, the most important systematic errors, okay? So this is the effective optical depth plotted as a function of redshift. The effective optical depth is related to the mean flux by this equation for several, public data set, including ours, which is represented by the triangles, the field triangles, okay? So as you can see, there is a systematic difference between the low resolution determination by Presley, Beeke, and Snyder, which is the effective optical depth evolution you will get when you try to analyze low resolution spectra, and the high resolution one. Okay, so there is a difference of order 10%, even more. And when we talk about power spectrum of the flux, in reality we compute the power spectrum of the flux divided by the mean flux. So you need to know this mean flux in order to model your spectra and to interpret your data set. Okay, and so Croft et al., they basically presented their final table, which was then used by the WMAP team, assuming an effective optical depth at redshift 2.7 of the optical depth proper of low resolution spectra. Okay. If instead you take the high resolution estimate, which is this one, okay, with a differ by around 10%, then you get completely different different answer. Okay, you get a sigma 8 instead of 0.7 of 0.9, and you find no evidence for running for a running spectral index and no tilt in the spectrum. Okay, so this, among all the different uncertainties, I guess is the most important one. It was already pointed out by Seljak a few weeks after WMAP data release. Okay, so this is the most significant systematic error. There are several others, of course, that you need to model quite carefully. The first one is the presence of metals. This is the ratio of the metals, which intrinsically contaminate the Lyman alpha forest, over the power of all the spectra without removing the metals. Okay, and you can see that even at very large K, the contribution is of order of few percent, and it is much bigger at small K's because these lines are small and they are highly clustered usually. Okay. And the second effect, which maybe I should spend a few seconds trying to describe it, is the effect of strong absorption system. Okay, so this is the three-dimensional flux power spectrum. This was the one-dimensional. It's another way of plotting this thing as a function of K. And this is the observed one, the blue one. And this is instead another flux power spectrum in which you randomly distribute along the spectra your high absorption system, your very large absorption system, column density, let's say, of 10 to the 15, 10 to the 16. And so you can see they are different. And in particular, in this region, which is the region that we want to recover at the end. And so basically, if you try to interpret this data set with a simulation that doesn't reproduce the high absorption, the density systems correctly, you will get the wrong answer. Okay, so the inclusion of this effect by the SDSS dramatically changes the results. Okay, for example, the inclusion of the damped Lyman alpha systems and the 4-sigma detection, which was claimed till a few years ago, and you can take a look at the papers now, translates into a no running at all of the running spectral index, translates into a no running at all. If you include this effect, okay? If you incorporate in your simulation the exact number and location and correlation properties of the strong absorption system.
Sure. When you say strong, what do you mean?
So when
K doesn't tell me anything, but in terms of
column density, larger, let's say, the 10 to the 15.5, 10 to the 16.
Okay,
yeah. So even sub, not only dump, yes. Lyman limit, some, yes. Actually, the damp Lyman is still another issue. Is still another issue here. It's column density much higher.
Yeah. Damp Lyman is about
10. Yes. Yes.
In your high resolution.
No, not in my. I don't claim that my high resolution simulation will predict the right number. But it's crucial. For example, in our data set, we know where the damp Lyman alpha system are. There are just three, and we can remove them. In some other data sets, you cannot remove them, or, I mean, it's very difficult to remove them if you have low resolution spectra. So in that case, if you want to interpret those data set with some simulations, then you have really to take care that your simulation reproduces the number of damped Lyman alpha system. Okay? You have really to check for this, and that's what people of the zone did.
Damped Lyman alpha system are also responsible for metal contamination?
Yes, I think so. Yeah, yeah. They're usually associated. They're usually associated with metals. Yes.
Sorry, but the same type of argument you could make it for the Lyman limit system that you cannot remove, and the same type of evidence in your simulation.
Yes. Yes. I think.
DLA, they understand that you can manage because you can get rid of the
yes.
Yes. Limit systems are the problem.
How many of them are there in the spec? Yeah. Yeah. I think that the number should be pretty small anyway. Now, what do you think?
One of the
yes, our spectra are more or less, our observed spectra are more or less 300 megaparsec long, so in commoving units. So that could make, yes, a difference. So, yeah, that's something that is worth checking out, yes. So this is the flux power spectrum. Just want, there is no point here in losing time, but what I want to address here is just the fact of different systematic uncertainties, okay? At very large scales, you are dominated by the continuum of the distance source, okay? And this is the cosmology bit. So we are trying to recover the linear the matter power spectrum, only this bit, because we claim that this bit is heavily contaminated by continuum fluctuation, and this bit is very strongly sensitive to the temperature that you assume for intergalactic medium. This is where the metals contribution peaks. This is where the noise peaks. Of course, this is not an exact division of these effects. Indeed, you expect that these modes are correlated. And for example, as I showed you before, the metals peaks here, but nevertheless, it propagates even at larger scales. Okay. So the method we are using to infer the dark matter power spectrum is the method proposed by Croft, and it's very simple. Okay. You claim that it exists a very simple function, the biasing function between the flux and the matter. And this biasing function, the first approximation, depends only on the wave number. Okay. Well, depends. If you write it this way, it depends on the wave number at which you are looking. So this method has been critically discussed by a bunch of people, and among all these papers, I would like to emphasize that this is the most accurate. The Gnedi and Hamilton paper is the most accurate and critical discussion of this method, and they found that it works. So the idea is this: you run a grid of simulation, you have your observed flux power spectrum, you find which simulation gives you the best fit to your observed flux power spectrum, then you have your observed flux power spectrum, and you divide it by this biasing function, and you get the observed matter power spectrum. So it's really easy. And the biasing function, of course, should depend on cosmological parameters, the mixed flux and the temperature. And the biasing function is what we want to have from the simulation. There is a recent paper by McDonald et al. Which address why the flux power spectrum seems to be error-bar statistics, even if you take into account galactic winds, DLAs, metals, limit system as well, I think. So this is the flux power spectrum, one-dimensional and two-dimensional, for different box sizes and different resolution. And this was an issue at the beginning to find out what is the correct box size, the best box size and the best resolution to recover the power spectrum in this yellow range, okay, the cosmology range. And we found that, for example, the 60 megaparsec 400 cube was a good compromise. If you have smaller resolution, then of course you lack of resolution and you don't reproduce your structure anymore. So at the level of the error bars that I will quote here, all these simulations basically are equivalent, and at the end we decided to stick on this 60 megaparsec 400 cube. Of course, we have to ask what is the effect of the temperature. What is the effect if you run a simulation with a complete different temperature? Okay, we don't know the temperature. We have very little observational constraints on these two parameters, T0 and gamma. Okay. And so, for example, here, this is the difference between a hot and cold simulation and at the limit of the observational bound. So this is the very hot and this is the very cold, something like T0 in one case is 4.4, in the other case 3.7. And you can see that the differences are of the order of 10%, a bit less, even at large scale, at large scales, and at small scales they become larger. And in this case, we fix basically T0, and we change the value of little gamma. Okay, and so even in this case, we have the same more or less conclusion that at the large scales, the differences in different simulation with different temperatures is of the order of 5%, and then as soon as you move to smaller scales, this discrepancy is much larger. Okay, so we want at the end, when we quote our results, to incorporate different thermal histories, of course, in our final error bar. And another very surprising difference that we found is basically the difference between different simulations. Okay, so basically what I plot here is the ratio between a given fiducial model of the biasing function over another model as a function of the effective optical depth. Okay, so for difference sigma 8, and this is the scaling which was found by Croft, and this is the scaling which was found by Gnedi and Hamilton. Croft uses a combination of hydro and dark matter simulation. Gnedi and Hamilton use another method, which is called hydro-PM, which is much faster, but in a way less accurate, as they say. And what you find here is that our scaling lies in between. So what does this plot tell you is that if you get an effective optical depth of 0.35, okay, this the inferred biasing function will be something like 10%, 10%, even more. Okay, let's compare 0.3 and 0.35. It will be 20% biasing function difference between these two choice of defective optical depth. This is the low resolution. This is the high resolution one. This was taken by Croft at the beginning. This is taken recently in a reanalysis of Croft. Then you get really a 20% difference in the biasing function, so a 20% difference in the amplitude of the inferred dark matter power spectrum. And these are the other scaling which are different as well for temperature and gamma. I don't want.
Can you understand why this low going
Croft is so different from the others? No. I think that the main reason is that the simulations are different, are very different. Okay, Croft used mainly dark matter simulation, I would say. Yes, I mean, yes, it should be, it should be. But you see, yeah, this is the so at the end, when we quote the error bars, we will incorporate even these differences between simulation. We've been pretty much very conservative, I would say, in our final estimate. So what have we learned at the end from this? We learned two things. That first, the statistical error seems not to be a very big issue. Okay, it's subdominant compared to systematic errors. Okay, so if you have more spectra, that wouldn't help that much, at least in our with our method. And that this is the this is the contribution of several uncertainties on the fluctuation amplitude. And so you can see that the main contributions here are the estimate of the effective optical depth. So if you have more spectra to more accurately estimate the mean flux, that would help actually a bit. And then the uncertainties in different numerical simulations. So in order to get better constraints with this method, what you really need to do is do better in all of this, in all of this bunch of several systematics and uncertainties. So this is our final result, the linear dark matter power spectrum as a function of k, our points, okay, at redshift 0.17, at redshift 2.12 with an effective optical depth of 0.17. And what you can see is that there seems to be a reasonable good fit, which is not the best fit actually, is the one with sigma 8.1, no running in the spectral index, and n equal 1. Okay, so this is the model that would match, this dashed line is a model that matched the Croft data with the wrong effective optical depth, let's say. It is much lower, so this model here, this is the 2.72, okay, the Croft original sample is this one. You cannot see maybe very well. This dashed line is the same model as here. Okay, it matches here the original Croft data. It doesn't match the our data. We reanalyze the Croft data with the same optical depth that they assumed. Okay, is this one, and we fall on top of them exactly. Okay, if we choose another effective optical depth, which is the main uncertainty, then we end up here, okay, with the best fitting model, which is very similar to the model at low redshift. The two samples seems to be consistent as soon as you choose the right effective optical.
The observational with no function?
The observational with
no function.
The points look very good. All these points have been, the yellow range is the range that we claim is less affected by systematic errors. So all these points are basically observed. So, yes, all these points. And you can claim, we don't use, for example, these two points here because we claim that, and indeed, if you plot the covariant matrix, they show heavy correlations. And but these ones are not correlated. Okay. The covariant matrix is pretty much diagonal.
Question.
Yes.
You were saying the solid line fit, but it wasn't the best fit.
The best fit I will show you to you right now. It's a combined fit of both the data sets. So yes.
So the feature in the point is
this one you mean? Well, as you can see, this is are the one sigma error bars, for example, and this model is really fit. Well, it doesn't fit this point, for example. Yeah, it seems that I don't know what I mean. For example, here there is a feature in the Lucas, for example. Here is somewhat here, this feature, okay? So it's an observed feature. The red, this one. So the original graph is the empty triangle, this one, okay? And it falls exactly on top on their analysis of the graph with their effective optical depth. Why are you laughing? You told me yesterday that you don't believe this point. Okay, so so here is okay. So the error bars that I'm quoting here incorporates all these uncertainties. Okay, and basically in this plot, I'm combining this estimate with the CMB data, and at redshift 2.12, what you see is that this is the effective optical depth n and sigma 8. Okay, and so this arrow indicates the low resolution, and this pretty conservative range indicates the high resolution estimate of the effective optical depth at redshift 2.12. The same is here. And so you can see that, for example, if you choose another effective optical depth, then the best estimate value of n changes. Okay, so for example, here, okay, maybe this is more clear, 3.59, you get an n of maybe 0.97. With the, this is for two different values of little gamma, okay, 0.97. If you choose 3.0, you get an n of 0.99. Okay, I will come back to this in another plot. Before, if I have, sometimes I want to compare a bit with the SPSS. So the first question is to ask, what kind of observations are there available right now, and what kind of simulations? So the observations are this. So we have high resolution spectra on one side, few of them, okay, and low resolution of the other side. This is a zoom on a different region of the spectrum. And you can see they are very different. So in order to extract cosmological information from this, you really need to do lots of work. And this work has been done, this paper by McDonald, in which they really make lots of efforts to extract a flux power spectrum, an observed flux power spectrum. In a way, here is much easier, no, to compute it. And the second, this is a comparison between the Lucas power spectrum at different redshift and the SDSS. They pretty much overlap. And this is the linear power spectrum. And here they show some difference, actually. You see, their power spectrum is much smoother. These are the one sigma error bar. So the mean estimate lies in the middle. Ours is not, okay. They have many more spectra, and they treat systematic errors in a different way. And it seems that ours is a bit higher. And the second point is that what kind of simulations shall we use to model this Lyman process? And this method has been very successful, I would say, till a few years ago. But now, at least at the error bars, you want to do precision cosmology, maybe it's not enough. Okay, so this is an approximate method to simulate the IGM distribution, in which basically you modify the equation of motion for gas particle by adding a pressure term. Okay, and it was proposed by Gnedi and Hui, and we did a comparison. This is an hydrodynamical simulation, and this is an HPM simulation. As you can see, they look different, and what are these differences translated into the flux power spectrum? They are of the order of 20-30% at large scales, okay? So, and even the PDF looks incredibly different. So, maybe we should start worrying about more the theory than on. No, I'm using full hydro, yes. HPM is used by the SDSS people. So, another quantity we're interested in is the sigma. Well, maybe I can skip this. I can go directly here. And this is the sigma 8 when you combine. So this has been done in the framework of Monte Carlo Markov change method with the probe called Cosmin C. This is the sigma 8 versus N, the spectral index, for WMAP. WMAP plus the Croft data set with, let's say, with the wrong effective optical depth, and WMAP plus our data set. And this is one sigma into sigma contours. So the case in which you have a scale-free spectrum is this one. And you can see that you have a small evidence of a tilt when you combine Croft data, but when you combine our data and Croft as well with the right effective optical depth, this evidence is no longer there, and you can see that you are perfectly consistent with n equal 1, and those are our two best fit values with the 1 sigma error bar. And this is again for the running. WMAP alone, as I said before, this is the best fitting value. WMAP plus Croft and WMAP plus ours, which is consistent with no running at all. And this is the results by Seljak. You see the running spectral index as a function of NS is exactly the same plot as here. And you can see that the error bar is much tighter for two reasons. The first one is that they use other data sets as well, not only the their spectra, but even Galaxy and the Bias. And the second is that they have really indeed at the end smaller error bars than ours. And at the end, you want to compare the two, their error bars is basically half of ours. And sigma 8 is consistent, our error bars is about twice as theirs. And n is perfectly consistent, I would say. So, no, so okay, this point is this, okay, that if you, what they did in order, so basically they claimed that this low, very weak evidence of a running from WMAP only is due to the first few multiple. And so what they did is basically they removed this by modifying the data, by saying that, and they removed this, and basically their WMAP only goes on top of here. So when you apply that, when you add on WMAP corrected, let's say, these data sets, then you go basically on zero. So this is the main thing. So I'm almost done. And two other things. One thing is that maybe you can relate basically the running and the spectral index to fundamental properties of inflation. So at least for model of slow roll inflation. So basically, if V is the inflaton potential, you can express the running and NS as a function of V and its derivatives. Okay. So this is what we did. It's exactly the same plot as before, but with other axes. So it's nothing difficult. And what I plot here is this epsilon V, which is in turn epsilon 1, which is R, the tensor of a scalar ratio. And then two other parameters which are supposed to describe the slow roll inflation, key and eta. And what you can see here is that the distribution of these data points, this is the one sigma and two sigma, as a function of the tensor of a scalar contribution. And this quantity is important because it tells you if there are gravity waves, for example. So our best fitting values at the end is consistent with no gravity waves. So is and the same thing has been done by Seljak et al. Collaborators, is the same kind of plot where they marginalize over epsilon, and they found a tighter constraints actually, r smaller than 0.45 at 95% limit. So this is much tighter, and it is again for the same reason. They use more data sets and their error bars are smaller. So this is something that I did this morning, so please take it as really tentative thing. So the Lyman alpha forest data are important because with them you can constrain the neutrino mass, for example, and that is has been done by this SDSS collaboration as well. And you can constrain maybe the mass of what are matter particles, okay? So if you have a universe in which you have neutrinos or in which you have what are matter particles, your power spectrum is supposed to have some features, more or less at the scales of the forest, okay? For neutrinos, we are talking about scales of 0.1 h over megaparsec. For what are matter, these scales depend on the mass of the what are matter particles, but it can be at much smaller scales, but more or less the scales are inside the forest region. So for example, here you can see the marginalized likelihood, which is the continuous line, and the mean likelihood, which is the dotted line. And this is the plotted as a function of the mass of the total mass of the neutrinos. And you can see that basically our constraints, I think this is should be something like 60 at 2 sigma, I think. I don't know exactly, but basically the total mass should be at least, if I believe this, if I have to believe this first preliminary run, should be smaller than 1 eV. Okay, and this is, I think that the SDSS finds something like smaller than 0.45 eV at 95% level. So again, this is a reflection of our larger error bars, and is the reflection of the fact that this run I just used WMAP and Lyman Alpha. I didn't include 2DF, I didn't include galaxy bias and other observable. And this is for World Dark Matter, and I just want you to focus on these two plots here. Alpha is the scale of the transition in 1 H/MPa, okay? So at scales for K, for wave numbers, larger than this value, let's say, the power spectrum is suppressed. There is no more power in your simulation. The halos, there are no halos, basically. Okay, so what you can see here, this alpha can be translated into World Dark Matter particles, and you can notice two features. One is that it seems that at least from our data set, the best fitting value is something like 0.075, which translates into a mass of 1 divided by 1.5, so 0.7, let's say 700 eV. Okay, and you can see the other thing, that this tail extends, this likelihood is very flat here. Okay, so it means that really all the masses larger than this value fits our data. So we can give lower bounds, and the lower bounds here seems to be something like masses, World Dark Matter masses larger than 750 eV, which is a quantity in agreement with the findings of Narayan et al. That did a similar study with Lyman Alpha Forest data, using even the power not only the power spectrum of the flux, but even the PDF of the flux. And with other findings, for example, I think that Hyman studied World Dark Matter scenarios and implication of on reionization, and they find somewhat a similar lower bound on the World Dark Matter mass particle. So this is something really preliminary up to now. Something which is not preliminary is this. This is a paper on AstroPH, and let me just spend, this is the last slide before the summary. This is the ionization rate as a function of redshift, and it has been recovered using the fluctuating Gunn-Peterson approximation. Okay, so basically, if you believe the fluctuating Gunn-Peterson approximation, and we investigated it quite accurately, basically, if you assume that you know all the cosmological parameters, you can ask what is the right gamma, okay, in order to match the effective optical depth. I have the input gamma of the simulation, the input, let's say, ultraviolet background spectrum, and I ask myself what is the right gamma in order to match the effective optical depth, which is an observed quantity. This gives you an estimate, an observational estimate of the ionization rate. And we basically, our results is represented by the diamonds, the field diamonds, and these error bars incorporates all the possible systematic uncertainties, temperature, different cosmology, different background, different uncertainties in galactic winds, for example, and all these things, uncertainties in the numerical simulation. So we have been pretty conservative, and these are our 1 sigma error bar. And what you can see here is that if you take basically an Arp-Madau spectrum which has quasars only, you cannot fit our predictions. Okay, so it seems that at least in this version that Francesco Arp provided to us few weeks ago of the Arp-Madau background, basically you need a substantial contribution of galaxies, of Young-Stan forming galaxies, even at redshift 2. Okay, even redshift 2 and at redshift, well, at all the redshifts, basically. And there are several other determinations. One is this one by Teitler with different spectra, and it is a redshift 1.9, which agrees remarkably well with ours and with different simulations. The actual reason is from the estimates by Scott et al. With the proximity effect. And this is by Steidel with Lyman-Bragg galaxy at redshift 3. So in order to have this data point here, I have to say that the background has been computed assuming several, making several assumptions. So the escape fraction is 0.1. There is a Salpeter IMF. The models are the usual Brussels and Charlotte ones. The metallicity, I think, is 0.2. There is an assumption about the star formation rate, about the emissivities of these objects. So, but it seems that at least if we believe these rates, then we must need a contribution of galaxy, even a redshift 2. And so these are the conclusions. So LUCAS is a unique high-resolution view on the universe redshift 2.1 at scales which cannot be probed by any other observables. Okay. And up to now, it seems that data are more advanced than the theory. We found differences in between different hydrodynamical codes. And it seems that two different groups, this STSS and our group, more or less find the same results. Okay, so there is no evidence for the running, pretty much the best fitting value is n equal 1, and the sigma 8 is pretty high, something like 0.93 or 0.9. So I think it's nice that with two different data sets, with two different kind of theoretical modeling and with different different assumptions, we get the same results. So we are planning to compare in a more accurate way our different findings. But it seems that there is a kind of agreement, I would say now, on these results here. So you can get, I show you some weak constraints on inflationary models. You can get some constraints on neutrino mass and world dark matter particles. That's it. Thank you. Yes. Yes, it's quite weak, but it seems that the last data point or the two last, they show a weak evidence of a bending. I mean, they are a bit suppressed compared to, let's say, standard lambda CDM. Well, they didn't check for that, and I think that they can check at these scales, but they cannot go below that scale because their spectra are very low resolution compared to ours, something like a factor 20 less than ours. So if there is a feature at these scales, I think they can definitely probe it. But if you want to go to smaller scales, that they cannot. Yes.
When you use this version,
no, not at all. Not at all, because basically when you ask what is your when you ask your spectra to reproduce the effective, the mean flux, the effective optical depth, if you write down the definition of optical depth, you will find out that the requirement of matching the observed mean flux basically allows you for the omega baryon, basically cancels out the dependence on omega baryon. So is right, if you write down the definition of optical depth, basically, the dependence on omega baryon is totally cancels out when you ask your spectra to match the mean flux. When then you try to combine your data with the CMB, then since there is a correlation between omega baryon and omega matter, then this is not more independent.